welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host, El Jefe, of this podcast, James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
No quote tonight.
No quote tonight, and an apology right off the bat from me. I apologize to all you believers for having to deal with my congested-sounding, extra-nasally voice this evening. I am obviously battling a little bit of a cold, and my candy apple head really just seals in the congestion. So sorry for having to deal with that. I assure you I am pumped up on as many drugs as the FDA would allow for me to do this podcast. And Jeff, you gave me just a great pump-up speech to make sure that we recorded one tonight. So thanks for that.
You're welcome. And I love candy apples, so.
Well, good. Excellent. Welcome back to...
And I love contributing positively to the podcast.
Welcome back to Lucha Lowdown. We are continuing along with our reviews, our trips down memory lane as Lucha Underground is airing their greatest hits. This week's episodes that they put on were Trios Champions and Fight to the Death. But that is burying the lead because we have some news that we need to talk about that pertains to Lucha Underground moving forward with new episodes and in the future and everything like that. So the first thing that I saw this week is Lucha Underground put out on their Facebook page a little new banner photo. Now, I've not seen anything officially confirming this or not, but I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what this means. They put out a banner photo that just had 531-17 with the Lucha Underground logos on it and the El Rey Network logo on it. So, Jeff, I'm inferring that that, of course, means that that is the return date for Season 3 of Lucha Underground. Your thoughts?
That was my meaning as well. That's why I tagged you in it and said not bad.
But as far as a return date, you know, when they said summer 2017, you and I kind
of... We feared the worst.
Absolutely, because summer 2017, like, I mean, May was pretty much as early as I possibly could place a summer return date. So this is pretty much best...
Technically not even summer.
Yeah, but I mean, when summer blockbusters start coming out, you know, May, typically the Iron Man movie will come out and what have you.
But
and
Captain
stuff
America
like that
comes out in April.
Yeah, so, well, maybe they should have gone by the April release date. But you know what I mean? So
Batman versus Superman came out in March.
Well, then let's have it come back in March. Rogue One came out in December. So,
all right, slow your roll.
Pretty much best case scenario, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I really feared August, so this is good.
August, wow. I see, I thought maybe, you know, late June or mid-July. August, I would have been destitute. Like, August is end of summer to me.
Well, it is the end of summer. But yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Between no more Westworld and then no Lucha Underground for that long, James, yeah, I don't know if you would have made it.
It would have been crushing, but May 31st is definitely doable, especially with these greatest hits, that which has been so much fun going back and watching and talking about with you, and I hope all you believers have enjoyed it as well. But, yeah, it does look like May 31st, 2017 will be Lucha Underground Season 3's return date. That is awesome. Can't wait. But that was not the only bit of news that came out this week dealing with Lucha Underground. And this is even bigger than Season 3's return date, because this is about the future of Lucha Underground, their exposure, and just really, I think, is just such a great sign for the company and their longevity. And that is the fact that Lucha Underground and Netflix have reached a deal to begin distribution of previous Lucha Underground seasons. They are going to be starting that on February 15th. So coming up here in very short order.
Oh,
seasons,
wow.
Seasons 1 and 2 are going to be on Netflix. This is going to cast such a wider net, I feel like, for people that want more wrestling content, that want to see Lucha Underground, maybe don't have El Rey Network, haven't had access to it. They don't want to pony up the dough to buy the seasons. Like, you know, I get it. So this is going to be huge for Lucha Underground, in my opinion. It's going to be great for Netflix. It is not circumventing Lucha Underground being on El Rey Network, which is one of the rumors that was coming out. I'm going to read this statement here. The Netflix deal is an extension of Lucha Underground's broadcasting distribution model. Netflix will air Season 1 and 2 with an opportunity to air future seasons thereafter on Netflix that have already aired on El Rey. Lucha Underground is not moving their programming exclusively to Netflix. This is just like any show on CW or NBC taking an earlier season or more and distributing it through digital platforms such as Hulu or Netflix. Lucha Underground is not for sale, to the best of my knowledge. El Rey is very happy, to the best of my knowledge, with the series. This is from Court Bauer, who is speaking with WrestleZone.com. So this is going to be on Netflix. I know it's at least going to be on Netflix US and Netflix Canada, and I think probably as many other of the Netflix outlets as possible. So this is big. What do you think about all this, Jeff?
Sounds like we're just one step closer to putting the Lucha Underground in the MCU.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
We'll do. We're gonna have crossovers with the Defenders in like 12 to 18 months.
I can't wait. But I mean,
Iron Fist in the Temple,
dude. Daredevil. I mean, Daredevil and Arrowstar. I feel like could really tear the house down.
Luke Cage versus Matanza. Jessica Jones beating the crap out of PJ Black. That'll show them.
That's actually a great call. That would. I feel like Dario Cueto would be a good Purple Man.
I was just gonna say that.
Maybe they should do some sort of thing with Ivelisse and Dario Cueto. Do some type of Purple Man esque story with that. But no, this is really incredible news because one of the things about Lucha Underground is not everyone gets El Rey Network, and just as far as their exposure, this is going to really help them out, I feel like, so much. And this is just the beginning. So with this
ever expanding.
Yeah, they're gonna be gaining a lot of traction. So this to me is the biggest news in wrestling in a while. And
take that, Mick Mahan.
Yeah, exactly. That egomaniac in the Northeast. But no, this is terrific. And I'm so happy for all the people that are working for Lucha Underground and El Rey Network. This is going to be, I think, something that really ensures their future. So good on all you for the hard work. And I can't wait to see what's coming next, because I do think this is just, it's like pushing that rock down the hill. This is going to build up traction, build up steam. And this is just fantastic news. I was over the moon, overjoyed when I saw this. And I already have all the seasons, so it's not like I can't just go back and watch them. But just for everybody else, being able to experience it and get into Lucha Underground is really what we want. It's part of the reasons why we started doing this podcast, is how much we love Lucha Underground, obviously. So the more the merrier. More believers coming courtesy of Netflix. Great, great stuff. All right, let's get into the episodes, the greatest hits for this week. We'll start with Trios Champions. Jeff, I know you said previously this is one of your sort of favorite things to go back to and look at, because we love the original Trios Champions of Son of Havoc, Ivelisse, and Angelico. Right off the bat, I got to talk about the little recap package, because it was this point in time when Pentagon Jr. was doing all of his sacrificing stuff, and this is coming on the heels of when he attacked Melissa Santos, which we got to see in the recap package and all that jazz. So, it was fun to go back and remember that. And then we opened up with the Black Lotus training session, which was a badass video package. Just thoughts as you were sort of stepping into this part of Lucha Underground in time, Jeff.
Well, all right. To touch on what you had to say about Pentagon Jr., this is when his character kind of was revamped. And
pun intended?
I thought about it as I said it. And yeah, I think this is what shot him into being cool. Before that, like I said, I wasn't really digging the outfit. It looked a little too cartoonish and bulky and goofy to me. Now he looks much more impressive in the ring, especially in the match that we see him tonight. And then, yeah, what he's doing, he was kicking the crap out of all the Lucha Underground jobbers and breaking their arms. It was outstanding. It was a cool story, and it gave him something to do, because before that, he was just the skeleton face guy who was getting his ass kicked by everybody. He would later be replaced by three other skeleton face guys that couldn't do anything.
Well, I do agree with you in a certain sense that I think this Pentagon Jr. outfit and this sort of demeanor is what vaulted him to the forefront in a lot of people's eyes. I mean, I love this Pentagon Jr. look. Although
when I started to notice him more.
Yeah, I mean,
that's for sure.
And I did like his original outfit, but this one, it was a little sleeker, and it was edgier, and the whole breaking arm storyline is, because I think up to this point, Mil Muertes was probably my favorite luchador, Mil Muertes and Drago. And then once they started the arm breaking
in Cuerno,
and once they started the arm breaking storyline, I was like, all right, this guy's sacrificing people to some dark master by breaking their arms. I was like, all right, I'm in. This guy's awesome. Like, favorite. I don't care. This is great. So that is kind of what got me. And the fact that he went after Melissa Santos, I mean, rewinding in time to Lucha Underground Season 1, that to me was so novel because Melissa Santos was the ring announcer. And we sort of take it for granted now that, you know, she is a full-fledged character in the temple. But that, to me, as a wrestling fan, was like, what? Going after the ring announcer, like, and making that part of the storyline was just, was awesome. And,
yeah, they're like a separate entity.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they, you know, they're not there to, like, progress storylines along. They're literally there just telling the crowd who's coming
Say
in.
Names.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But this, I mean, and she already is, like, really good at what she does as far as that goes, like, the best that I've ever seen. But to be incorporated in a storyline in such a cool way was a novel concept that I feel like, you know, fast forwarding to midway through season three, you know, it's good to go back and remember, you know, just how different that was for the time. So starting off this episode with that whole recap package. So we got the Black Lotus training and everything like that with the original Dragon Azteca. And
she's writing in her diary, talking about wrestling camp.
Yes. Yeah. She's been there for however long. I don't know. I really
like wrestling
liked,
camp is hard, but I like it.
I really liked it. It's better than Camp WWE. I'll give you that. I really liked that vignette though.
I loved her story in season one. I just think that they completely dropped the ball with her in season two. I don't know if there was an injury on her part where she couldn't come or if there were some sort of prior commitments. Cause it just seemed like she fell off the face of the earth. And then by the time she came back, also the story got a little convoluted with her then joining forces with Dario. Yeah. Convoluted. So I don't know. It didn't resolve itself yet the way I'd like it to. She's definitely come back with a big bang as far as now she's got her entire clan with her. But I almost feel like we're still bogged down in something that really doesn't matter as much. Her war with Pentagon Jr., it's like, you know, Pentagon didn't even have anything to do with what she was originally there for and what her real driving purpose should be.
No, I get you on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just a little confused with what they've done with her.
I think she's a little confused, which is I think she's going to come back around full circle and realize the error of her ways, maybe to a certain extent, because she got played by Dario.
Yeah, I know. But think of how I'm thinking just from a presence perspective. Think of how much of a big deal she kind of was in season one. They kept cutting to her. She's sitting in the audience. Vignettes like this, the training with Dragon Azteca, her mission, talking about flashbacks of when she was a child and everything like that. I mean, there was a story brewing there. One of the bigger ones, I thought. That just never really came to fruition.
I get what you're saying. We're going to get back to sitting in the audience and everything like that a little bit later on. The first match of the evening was Sexy Star versus Pentagon Jr. And again, tying back into Melissa Santos and everything like that, one of the things when I first spoke to her is, again, how even in her ring announcing, she's telling a story because not enthused, obviously, announcing Pentagon Jr. coming to the ring because he tried to break her arm.
Understandable.
So, yeah, absolutely. So here is Sexy Star being her champion. And then, I don't know, I just wrote this down, something I noted on Vampiro's commentary, where, you know, he's talking about Sexy Star and how she's great and all that, but something dark is coming. And I don't know, I just like, Pentagon dark. It just struck me again, listening to Vampiro now as we go through knowing that they have this alliance. It is interesting to listen to him on commentary. And again, I wrote down, this might be my favorite Pentagon look. And, Melissa's face when she sat down just watching him was great too. If looks could kill. What'd you think of the match?
I thought the match was good. Just going on, I also was listening to what Vampiro was saying. Now that we're going back and rewatching episodes and we know what happens with the storyline, you kind of want to see what led up to it and if there were any hints or anything like that. It was just interesting to me listening to Vampiro like talking about the breaking bones as being unethical. And it's strange. Like, is he really criticizing Pentagon or is he just going through the motions and saying certain things? And I think we see that a little bit with the interview he has with Sexy Star on the next episode that we're going to be talking about. So I like that. I already mentioned that I enjoyed this Pentagon Jr. look and outfit. It's so funny with this part of the story. There was a lot of talk between Stryker and Vampiro about Pentagon Jr.'s master. Who is this master that he's sacrificing these bones to? Sacrificing a woman on the top of a temple.
Yeah, see, I like that.
Different words used for Master. Like, yeah, it was interesting just listening to the two of them speculate and then knowing what happened.
I liked that from Vampiro because he was talking about, you know, that a woman could mean different. A female sacrifice could mean something to certain gods or masters or what have you. And I was like, oh, okay. I appreciated, like you, like knowing where the road leads to and listening to it on commentary was very interesting. I actually think this is one of Sexy Star's better matches in Lucha Underground as well. I feel like her and Pentagon had good chemistry. Pentagon really was brutal with her. Like that kick to the gut early on in the match was just super vicious. I really enjoyed watching them go at it. And a great counter, although I've written down in my notes, BS counter, which into the backstabber, which gave Sexy Star the win. But really good match, I thought.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think both of them put on pretty quality matches. You've mentioned that before as far as their chemistry. I think to say that this is one of Sexy Star's better matches is a pretty big compliment because her work with Mariposa. And then I don't think her and Mundo had a bad match at all in season three.
Yeah, I don't. I think this one flowed maybe a little bit better than some of her matches with Mundo. And that might just be
I like her matches, Mundo.
A symptom of the fact that most of them were marred with interference and stuff like that. But
well,
yeah,
you know how I feel about that.
It sucks. I enjoyed her work with Mundo as well. I think her best match, I think her most important match,
No Mas,
was the No Mas. Well, with the No Mas match with Mariposa.
She had a match where she almost almost lost her mask. All right, that's an important match when you
And she's also the first female Lucha Underground champion. The first female heavyweight champion in a major North American promotion, at least in America, the United States, that is. So that certainly is very important as well. But the No Mas match, I don't know. I feel like that put her on the map with a lot of people, and it was incredible to watch. But this was a fun match, and you know, it was the opener in this episode, so that was cool to see. After that, we got Alberto El Patron, who we miss dearly, and Johnny Mundo interacting in the weight room of the temple. And I really enjoyed this vignette because El Patron definitely being like a dick to Mundo in it. You know, but it was interesting to me because Alberto El Patron was talking about how, like, you know, Johnny Mundo, you know, how he's such a fan of Johnny Mundo and he's been watching him, and that he was surprised and disappointed that he could not win the championship in Aztec Warfare. It's like, it's just kind of been the story of your life. You know, you see the brass ring and you don't quite get it. And I thought that was so good in a lot of ways because it's definitely harkening back to Mundo's run in WWE where they never put the belt on him. And it also served, in my opinion, that it sort of served to fuel what would become this great heel run for Mundo and why, when he finally does win the championship and everything, he emptied the kitchen sink. You know, he cheated his ass off to make sure it happened, you know, because he is so frustrated by this. And that's tying back all the way to season one. So I thought that was a good seed of character planted there. I really enjoyed that a lot. So I think that was some good, just very good writing and just seeing them interact too. I really do miss Alberto El Patron in Lucha Underground. I wish he would come back, and I know he's not with WWE anymore, so hopefully those doors will be opened again because he's awesome.
He was a great character that we only got like a taste of.
Yeah.
He had a lot of potential as far as things he could have done. I would have loved to have seen him as champ at some point, too.
I mean, one of the great moments, Mundo throwing him through Dario Cueto's office window.
It was brutal.
Yeah. So also from this vignette is Mundo alluding to how Alberto El Patron left WWE. Because Mundo just said, you know, I'm not just somebody you can slap around and not have any consequences. And that, of course, ties into the rumor that some employee in WWE made a off-color joke. And Alberto gave him what for about it, and that led to his firing. So, I don't know. I appreciated a lot of the things that were in this. They have a good natural chemistry about it. It makes sense that they would be rivals to me too. Just I don't know. So I was picking up what they were putting down with this. But that then did take us to the Trios Championship match. It is an elimination style three-way Trios title match. Tejano, Cage, and Cuerno versus Son of Havoc, Ivelisse, and Helico, and Big Rick, Killshot, and the Mac. Thoughts on the match, Jeffrey?
I do like the idea that a trios championship match would also include three different teams. I loved this tournament leading to this match. I completely forgot that Tejano and Cage were on the same team, you know, as far as just their shared history. The way I look at the King Cuerno, Tejano, and Cage team, because obviously they were like the clear favorites and all of that, and that's kind of how they were even talking and selling them as Stryker and Vampiro. It's funny because we were just talking about Alberto. They reminded me of like the League of Nations guys. There's like these big cocky guys that were all sort of like patting each other on the back, smiling and laughing, but they never really accomplished anything. And that's what I saw here. Like they were very dominant in the beginning, but I mean, they were also the first team eliminated. And then as far as Big Rick, the Mac and Killshot goes, I'm happy because it introduced the Mac and Killshot, but it was really like, here's three black guys.
Mac,
that's the way I looked at that team. And then of course my favorite trios team ever in the Lucha Underground is in Helico, Son of Havoc, and Evilise, just because of the chemistry the three of them had together. They're like a real team. Like I would read a Lucha Underground comic book about the three of them. You know, it's like that they had distinct personalities. They had a story with each other before they became a trios team. I liked the rivalry between Angelico and the two of them. I liked his match against Evilise where Son of Havoc was the ref and he was kind of all molesty and Son of Havoc had to keep like interfering. And then I just, they're all very different too. Nothing against Drago, Phoenix, and Aerostar, but you know, they're a very different kind of team and they tell a very different kind of story. I like this with the clashing personalities. The fact that they don't even want to be together, but they, of course, still want to succeed. They're all, you know, competitors. And it's also for tag belts.
They are the most fun.
There's no team, I think, that really comes that close. I mean, I like the Worldwide Underground and stuff, but, I mean, there isn't hostility there. They're still a coherent team, like most of the teams we've seen. This is a team that they're not even a team. They're more of a time bomb, if you will, James.
Yes, thank you. It's true. And so you get that instant storytelling there that, you know, are they going to implode? And it's a great narrative right off the bat. And I'd like to point out that there is a Lucha Underground comic. I'll have to check out to see how heavily the trio's champions are featured within it. But you're right. They are, in my opinion, the best trios team that Lucha Underground has had. They tell the best story. This odd trio, not odd couple, and they made it work. Like, even in the video package leading up to this match, with, you know, against all odds, you know, they were, Angelico and Evilise were bailing on Son of Havoc, and they still managed, you know, he still managed to pull out the victory for the team. And it was great storytelling, and it was such a great build. And I agree with you as well that the fact that it was being defended in this sort of a three-way elimination tag, or not defended, but decided for the first ever trios decided. Champions, or so it would appear, was fitting as well.
I was going to say, I also like them because the three of them seem to have like very different skill sets. You know what I mean? Where some of the teams, the one I just mentioned before, which I do like, I don't mean to be piling on Drago Aerostar and Phoenix, it's just they all seem to have like the same ability, where these three are all very different, you know.
Yeah, a couple notes about the match. I mean, obviously there are some great spots, you know, there's the double suplex, you know, Mac flying around, but one of the things I noticed even when they were coming out, and maybe this is just my imagination because I know she hurts herself in this match, but it looked like Evilise was favoring her leg even
she
from
did.
The walk down.
She was rubbing it already. She was holding it.
Yeah, like, so she was already gingerly coming to the ring.
Something must have already happened.
So, god dang, kudos to her for going through with the match, you know? Like, that. I mean, that,
really, two matches.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think all of the competitors knew that she was legitimately hurt, because there were times where they still started whooping on her. I was like, oh, my god. And then you just hear her wail. I mean, I got to give so much credit to Evilise for just the amount of heart that she showed to get through this performance and everything like that. I didn't notice that when I watched it the first time, you know, when it was airing.
Yeah, me neither.
Pretty incredible stuff by her. And then the other thing I want to mention is it is in this match. I mean, we saw him in the audience earlier in the episode, but this is when we see Daivari sitting in the crowd, and he gets involved and starts attacking Tejano after Tejano got thrown into him and spilled his drink on him. And then Daivari just starts whooping Tejano's ass. I remember watching
I love Daivari, dude.
I really enjoyed his involvement in Lucha Underground.
I miss him.
And, like, this being, like, the catalyst for it, I remember, I'm like, oh, my God, like, this is awesome. Like, Daivari was just in the crowd, and, like, they're sort of, like, just alluding to, like, how wealthy he is. And
yeah.
I enjoyed it, and the idea that, you know, somebody, just some wealthy a-hole, like, watching the show, like, that happens to also be a badass fighter, getting
involved.
Could
do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
it makes sense when you look at it from, like, the underground fighting aspect.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, definitely. It puts over that idea about the temple. So this was Daivari's introduction to Lucha Underground. Just extrapolate. You digged?
Oh, I totally digged. I miss him. It was another one of those great things from season one. I was always a sucker for Steve Blackman in the WWE, and I'll always remember that he was just some guy sitting in the crowd who got involved, you know, and that sort of thing. So whenever a character is introduced like that, I always think it's terrific. And yeah, he had been in the audience a couple times before Daivari, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah, because I remember them showing him. He was one of those guys I was keeping an eye out for. And yeah, so he's just some wealthy dude. And then I like it when he got bumped into by Tejano, and then they're just like, hey, man, you're sitting in the front row. That's what happens, Stryker and Vampiro.
Yeah.
And then it's like, call security. Who is this guy?
And then Stryker's like, I think I know who it is. You know, names on the tip of my tongue or whatever it is he said. But no, and I liked even in the coming weeks, you know, he comes out to the ring with like the drink in his hand and everything like that. And just, it was good. And he was also, he was good to like have somebody other than Dario Cueto to sort of like pay somebody like a Big Rick, you know, as far
exactly.
As
yeah. I like the idea that, yeah, he had the money and was funding things, but he also, it wasn't some power play against Dario or anything like that. He was just involved doing his own thing.
Yeah.
And, kind of just looking for mercenaries to watch his back.
Didn't
Cage back him up?
I think so, yeah. Didn't
Cage
a long run.
Cage destroy someone in the locker room to prove his point?
Yeah, what was it in the back? It was Big Rick, the Mac, and somebody else, I thought. And Cage, like, destroyed them.
Yeah, that was, like, his audition.
Yeah. But, yeah, Daivari did not have a long run in Lucha Underground, but it was nice seeing him again. So
yeah,
that was cool. So that was the main thing I noticed from the first match, which, of course, Daivari's interference led to Tejano's team being eliminated. And then, again, just Eva Lise's heart throughout this whole thing. But the Fall of the Angels to Killshot led to the crowning of the first ever Trios Champions, or so we thought.
So it would appear.
Yes, because then El Jefe came out, and I just love it, muchachos. But he basically said that there is one other team that is going to be entered in this tournament, handpicked by Dario Cueto himself. And, of course, as you were watching Season 1 at this time, there is no doubt as far as who it was going to be. It was going to be the damn crew. And so no shock there that they were getting put into this position. But again, more great storytelling of this team just defying the incredible odds. And it is in this match, Jeff, that I think is one of the most memorable and, you know, just more most often cited why I love Lucha moments of all time in Lucha Underground. And that is the first time that the Angel and Helico really took flight off the top of the temple there into the ring. And Helico's dive, your thoughts?
It's my favorite spot in Lucha Underground. Visually, it's striking. And I just love Matt Stryker's commentary building up to it. Because they were in such dire straits at that point. Bale had beaten the crap out of Angelico. That's how Angelico even ended up there in the first place. And basically just left him unconscious on the roof. Son of Havoc was getting the crap kicked out of him by Mr. Cisco in the crowd. But then I think he was able to fight his way back. But then he was double teamed. He was stuck outside the ring. And then Eva Lise, I mean, was cornered. She was injured, and also she's a small girl to begin with. She can't fight them all off, and so she was helpless. And then the crew, in typical crew fashion, you know, they have her outnumbered and outgunned, and then just – and Helico out of nowhere just soaring through the air and lands on both of them perfectly. I mean, it could not have gone any better.
It was insane. The first time you
And the reaction
from
the crowd was – sublime. It was exactly what it needed to be. I remember the first time I watched that, I was just out of control.
Yeah, because the first time you see, because again, Lucha Underground is giving you things that you haven't seen before. And so, like, the idea that this guy is going to take this insane dive from the roof of Dario's office into the ring is just unheard of. So it was an incredible spot to see. Like, the first time you see it, it is just pure mark out moment. Just one of the all time great moments from Lucha Underground.
Absolutely.
Which is the moment from their crowning achievement. So they get the double pin in this match. They are the first ever trios champions. Just an awesome moment. I want them to get back together again. It makes me sad that they're not the trios team right now.
I'll tell you what makes me sad. It's not even so much that they're not together anymore. It's just that we had such an unsatisfying conclusion to their team's end, because then Helico got injured, and then the two of them kind of got screwed over, Son of Havoc and Ivelisse having to defend the titles by themselves. So they were outnumbered, and the belts were just sort of unceremoniously taken from them.
Yep, and they haven't really gotten their revenge.
Or actually, no, they lost them as a team, and then I think they got it back, or the two of them tried to get it on their own or something like that. Either way, it went bad. And I was just kind of bummed about that.
Yeah, and I mean, two out of three of them have had a rash of injuries with Ivelisse and Angelico. So, I mean, hopefully they can all get healthy at the same time and we see a reunion.
I'll be honest, man. I was thinking about that today, too. And nothing against any of them, because they're all great. I just don't think it's going to happen. Ivelisse is small. She's a small person, and that doesn't stop her from doing some really impressive spots. And I just don't think her body can hold up. And Angelico, maybe Angelico does some things that he should back off on too. And I think that's the problem.
String bean.
Yeah, where Son of Havoc is the sturdiest one, and I think that's why he holds up the best. He's a thick dude.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's pro wrestling. I think they'll be fine if they just take the time to really heal up, because I know there's a lot of pressures to come back as soon as possible. And I think that might play a role. So I hope they both just heal up. And whether they're a team or not, I think Angelico certainly is a single star in his own right.
So is Son of Havoc, though, man. That crowd pops for him.
Yeah, I think all three of them, honestly, are super over. Yeah. But like an Angelico feud with Mundo for the title is something that I very much so look forward to.
Especially if those two had his back once Worldwide Underground gets involved.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So, but yeah, it was just, this is a great moment. One of the all-time moments from Lucha Underground's history so far. So that concluded Trios Champions. Before we move on to the second episode of their greatest hits this week, it's time to take care of a little business.
And that little
is
business.
A little business. That is just to say thank you for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate all you believers. And that is to say, if you want to help us out, word of mouth is the best way to help us. And part of that is rating us, reviewing us on iTunes. The more you do that, the better it is for us. Spread the word on, you know, all your social medias and everything like that. All you wrestling fans, I know we're a close-knit network, and interacting with y'all so far has been great, and we love keeping that up. So please follow us on Twitter at Lucha Lowdown. When I can, I live tweet the episodes and everything like that. I'll even do that with the greatest hits, you know, if possible, but work's been pretty crazy. But certainly when the new episodes come back as well. So at Lucha Lowdown on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Email us, luchalowdown@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. It's been great. But, yeah, subscribe to us on iTunes, Audio Boom, that whole deal. We really appreciate it. And that is going to end my little advertisement for the evening. Back on with Lucha Lowdown. The second episode of this week's Greatest Hits is Fight to the Death. We start out this episode with Chavo Guerrero and Lotus outside, basically Chavo trying to buddy up to her and say that, you know, Los Guerreros, you know better than anyone and hate the Cuetos too and everything like that. And knowing how this ends, Chavo, you are a prick.
But, I mean, isn't that typical Chavo?
Typical Guerrero.
Typical Guerrero, for that matter, yeah.
Absolutely. Typical Guerrero move. I will say this. Chavo casting himself in that light, like, I don't know. I kind of dug it. Like, I was like, yeah, he could be a hero. Like, I would back Chavo, but he's not.
No. And not. With his last name, he can't be.
Yeah.
I like him being a snake.
But we start the in-ring action with two of your favorites, Jeff, going at it. Aerostar and Johnny Mundo. What'd you think of the first match?
Well, yeah, two very talented guys. What I liked about this one was we started seeing the Mundo character alignment shift, and they were talking about that Striker and Vampiro. And I agree with what you said about the vignette last on the last episode, where, you know, Mundo has kind of only gotten as far as he could as a nice, I mean, nice guys finish last. And so Mundo has to start cutting corners. He has to start being a little more vicious and a little more aggressive and a little underhanded. And I think that's what he was doing. And I really like that. And I think he was kind of playing that up with his match against Aerostar as well. There were a couple of spots where I thought it's not what face Mundo would have done per se.
Yeah, no, I agree. And they were really putting that over, even just, you know, hit the move set that he was using as far as, you know,
exactly.
Stomping a mud hole and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But their chemistry in the ring was very good. I mean, two very athletic, high-flying styles. And Mundo, again, like you said, in typical heel fashion, although we know he's a high flyer, starts using more of the ground game and everything like that. And that's just a smart way to sort of let the audience know and stuff like that, that the times they are changing and everything like that. But I enjoyed this match.
Yeah, and I kind of liked what Vampiro had to say about Mundo in the beginning, because I think it shows just what a dangerous opponent he is that he is well-versed in a lot of different fighting styles, whether it's American wrestling, whether it's mixed martial arts, or whether it's lucha libre. It's like, yeah, Mundo is one of the more talented competitors in the temple, and he's somebody that you should fear and should be worried about if you're up against him. I mean, I love Aerostar, you know that, but Aerostar shouldn't be able to beat Mundo most times.
Yeah.
You know?
No, Johnny Mundo... Yeah, absolutely. He should be one of the most imposing. He's like a really good, like a perennial favorite in sports, you know, that just like the Atlanta Braves just tends to come up short up to this point, you know. So he always is on the radar in terms of being in the title picture.
So
like you said, he's going to start cutting corners and everything like that. So I love that the seeds they've been planting with Johnny Mundo here in season one of Lucha Underground. And as we've talked about at length on this podcast, is that heel Johnny Mundo in Lucha Underground is just a gift to the wrestling viewing audience. The heel run that he's on right now, he's awesome. And
no, dude, he's found himself.
Yeah.
As far as who he should be in this sport.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a good match. And from there,
as a fan, I'm proud of him, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is shining. He's on the best run of his career, and I really loved his work in WWE. So that, I mean, this is it's been a fun 2.5 seasons of Johnny Mundo to watch. From that match, though, we got to one of my favorite features that I feel like I wish we got more of this.
I miss these, man.
Yeah. So it's the sit down Vampiro interviews, which, man, I really, really appreciate these things. I feel like it adds credibility to the broadcast team. To everything, because it made it feel like, I mean, that's, you know, they do that sort of thing in sports and everything like that. They'll have like these little halftime interviews and stuff like that. So having a little sit down interview, I really enjoyed this. So this week we got Vampiro and Sexy Star talking about her interactions with Pentagon and Superfly and everything like that. What did you think?
Well, what I thought was funny was you and I mentioned either a week or two ago about these Vampiro interviews, and I think you said that all of them were probably combative. I would say this one is the least combative, if anything. I think
Absolutely.
There were a couple times he still said a couple things that I thought were to try to get under Sexy Star's skin.
But when and you
didn't
help
out. How did you feel not being able to help?
No, not even not being able to help, letting it happen.
Oh, letting it happen, is that what he said? Yeah, see, when he said stuff like that, I thought that was a bit much. And then also, I thought Sexy Star had a good point. If I was a man, would you have asked me that question about, are you afraid of what Pentagon Jr. can do to you or whatever?
Yeah.
I was also going to say, I think season one is just perfect through its imperfection. Them trying a lot of different things and deciding what they thought stuck best and continuing with it. I wish this was something that they continued to do, but, you know, there's only so much time in an hour and they've got other stuff that they do instead. I also kind of like the idea of the storytelling aspect through the vignettes, and these interviews aren't that. So maybe it's okay that we did get rid of this. But yeah, season one is lightning in a bottle, man. You know?
Yeah. No, that is very well said. Perfect through its imperfections. However, I mean, I will say, and like, I'm biased because I know the Vampira has a very strong relationship with this person, but like, if when somebody debuts, say like a Taya comes to the temple, and then a week or two later, we get a sit-down interview to figure out what the hell she's all about and stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like there is power there that is left on the table. I love these segments, so I'd love to see them make a comeback. Just very enjoyable. Sexy Star putting over, you know, the fact that she wants to be an inspiration and everything. It gives you, beyond the vignettes, it's a much more point-blank way of being like, you know, what this person is all about. Not necessarily what's happening with them, but literally what they stand for. So I appreciated these very much so. So it was cool to see this one and Vamp and Sexy Star talking about it and, you know, bringing up my boy Pentagon. And, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So we'll see if these come back. But I get what you're saying as well. There's a lot to do in only an hour. But very fun to see this. Before we move on from that, though, I want you to share this on the episode because we were talking before we went on the air here about Vampiro. And we mentioned, I think it was last episode where Vampiro was talking about vampire cults.
And yeah, he dropped it really fast. And then it's like, you know what I mean.
And we were talking about how, no, nobody knows what you mean, except maybe your brother who was with, who served with Vampiro. I don't know if serve or what is the right term, but
they went on patrol together.
They went on patrol together in the Guardian Angels. And so just share your story, Jeff, because I sort of allude to that. Well, maybe Scott knows what Vampiro is talking about.
All right. So, yeah, I was watching the Royal Rumble this last Sunday with my brother, and I just happened to talk to him about the podcast and how we had mentioned that thing about Vampiro and the vampire cults. And I was like, and nobody knows what you mean. And then my brother, without missing a beat, goes, well, dude, he was involved in vampire cults at a very young age throughout like all of his late teens and early 20s. And he started just going on this long diatribe of basically like Vampiro's life story and things that happened to him in his childhood, which kind of marked him for the rest of his life.
Dude, so he literally did know what Vampiro was talking about. So
he knew about the vampire cults that he was involved in, and then he talked about some other things too, which I'm not going to get into. But yeah, he knows a lot about Vampiro.
That's awesome. So, yeah. So
and completely understood the reference. He's like, oh yeah, the vampire cults.
That's, well, you know, so maybe Vampiro was talking directly to people in that sphere. But moving on from there, we did get...
They live in a different world than us, James.
I guess so, man. But that really
I'm
made...
glad they're out there.
That made my night to hear that he literally did know what Vampiro was talking about. We moved on to the Lucha Underground Championship match, Hernandez versus Prince Puma. And I thought about you as we got to watch this episode because we've been going back and forth about Conan's involvement with Prince Puma in season one, and that it was really these interactions with Hernandez that convinced you that, you know, Conan was not going to be a bad guy.
Conan was on the up and up.
Yeah. What did you think about the match and just all the interactions and stuff?
I forgot how much I even miss Hernandez. At the time, I didn't think much of him because I thought Puma was going to get screwed over. But I liked his size. I liked his build. I liked the fight he had against Puma. I don't know about you, but I look at these old Prince Puma matches and I can see how his character has progressed. He seems a lot more unsure of himself. He makes kind of those rookie mistakes. I like it when Conan is actually ringside and is kind of shouting different things to him. It almost reminds me of like a mixed martial arts match and he's the coach in his corner. And there was one point, I think I wrote it down. Oh yeah. Hernandez kept doing the same thing, and then Conan just yelled. It's like, he's done that too many times, Puma, you know, get caught in that again.
Yeah, for you not to have a counter for it. Yep, I remember
that.
Yeah,
which I thought that was terrific. It really showed the relationship between Conan and Puma, and kind of also shows the importance of Conan, where, you know, I was accusing Conan not that long ago of being, you know, that guy who pops up, and it's like, oh, you need me, even though Puma basically has all the talent and skill in the world and, you know, is already champion. And yeah. So, I mean, it was kind of good to see that. Of course, once again, I'm noticing all the things that Vampiro is saying about Conan. One thing that struck out to me, stood out to me, because I probably really hit a chord with me back then, was he mentioned that Conan would follow the belt. You know, it's like, if Hernandez is champion, Conan will call him up next week and ask him for a job. And that's exactly what I thought Conan was going to do.
I appreciated the fact that Vampiro was just crapping on Conan the entire time and how it just annoyed him.
Not
a fan
of that, man.
Like, to me, just not at all. But, you know, one of the things that I was struck by with this is it made me remember that just Prince Puma was the best Lucha Underground champion we've had so far. Like, as far as a fighting champion.
Successful. Yeah, dude, he's a fighting champion. And I'm thinking of the roster of guys that he defeated. You know, like, he had this feud against Hernandez. He took out Cage. He took out Mundo. I think he's beaten Phoenix. You know, like, he beat a lot of the top talent.
I honestly, as far as world champions go, in recent memory, just one of the best. And that was one of the things I remember from watching season one, is that it sort of harkened back to the old. It's like, if you're the champion, you're the standard bearer for the company. You're going to go out there, you're going to put the belt on the line, you're going to put on a show for the fans night in and night out. That's why you're the champion, because you're the best ambassador of this product. And what a champion he was. So I really appreciated that. And it's good to remember just how badass of a champion Prince Puma was for Lucha Underground. So I enjoyed this match. Hernandez made his bed behind the scenes as far as not being in Lucha Underground anymore. But a fun match.
Oh, no, I know why, yeah.
A fun match, I think, highlighted by when Puma got catapulted up onto the railing and then did the moonsault. That was just awesome. But Puma prevailed here. He used a little bit of heel tactics, which I remember the spot, but I remember it, I guess, through the lens of like, oh, well, it's just kind of what you do in Lucha Underground. This was much more heelish. Or at least not heelish, but much more just blatant rule breaking than I remember.
Cheating, dude.
Yeah, just much more blatant cheating than I recalled. But, you know, whatever. It was Hernandez. That took us to the death match.
You can't
match.
Let Hernandez be champion.
Yeah, no, not at all. That took us to the death match, because this is the episode where we get the return of Mil Muertes and, you know, Katrina. I wish they'd... I need to go back and watch the vignette where Katrina said it was time for him to come back, because that was one of the top markout moments for me in Lucha Underground. I was like, oh my God, they're bringing back Mil Muertes. Like, this guy was dead, kind of deal. So
already dead.
Yeah, well, he died again. So this was the first rebirth.
Yeah, that means he has like 998 to go.
This was the first rebirth of Mil Muertes. And you know, this is, again, like we've talked about a few times on the podcast, every time he comes back, they add a little something to him. And, they certainly did that here. He looked so imposing, and everything like that. Like whatever they did, it was working for him, in this repackaging, this rebirth. Katrina looked phenomenal. and it just, I really enjoyed this. And so, I mean, it's this eternal struggle between Phoenix and Mil Muertes. I really enjoyed this match. I liked, some of the things that stood out to me was I liked that, Matt Stryker mentioned that Katrina and the Disciples of Death were circling around the ring. Perhaps that was sort of cultivating some type of dark energy. And then Vampiro mentioned they were doing it counterclockwise. Not sure what that meant. It was those little details, that really put over a supernatural character like this. What'd you think of the match?
You're definitely right about Mil Muertes just seeming more intimidating. I don't know really what it was either. There was one point where, Vampiro was like, what are you looking at me for? He's like, that was terrifying.
Yeah. Well, the change in his attire, I think, helped a lot, you know?
Yeah, and then also, I think, once again, it really does come down to the showmanship and how you were talking about them circling around the ring, and now all of a sudden he has this entourage of, you know, skeletons. And what I also found funny was, I think this is one of the more one-sided matches he's had against Phoenix, and yet Phoenix's mask remained intact.
I was
thought
thinking
as far
about
as what
that.
He looked like at the end of the match, he didn't look like he had gotten his ass kicked as much as he did. And I can't think of a time where Mil Muertes was more dominating against Phoenix.
Yeah, no, you're right. This was a very one-sided match. It was to really put over the fact that Mil Muertes
More powerful. Yeah,
yeah, he is more powerful, and he was. But you're right. You're right. This is he did not destroy the mask of Phoenix as he is wont to do. And yet on commentary, they're talking about how this might be even more brutal than the Grave Consequences. I'm like, not so fast there, guys.
Phoenix looked like shit.
Yeah, Phoenix looked like he definitely lost the match. After Grave Consequences. But however, in this one, later on in the match, Phoenix did get thrown through the ceiling, which was insane. That was definitely a Why I Love Lucha moment. And I liked Marty Elias screaming about somebody getting to open the door. Yeah, and then...
Yeah, I like that too.
I like the Disciples of Death literally feeding Phoenix to Mil Muertes for the flatliner. I thought that was awesome.
I'll be honest, though, I found that almost anticlimactic after the slam through the roof. You know, because it's kind of slow, it's a little drawn out, and the flatliner I almost felt like was unnecessary, because at that point, Phoenix was broken. I don't think Phoenix fought again after he was slammed through the roof.
No,
I think
it
just kind of carried out, and I mean, the flatliner was more for show. I don't know. I was just like, man, maybe you just leave him in there.
Well, Marty hadn't called it off, so got to do it.
Yeah, no, I know. I think I would have done it a little differently as well. I mean, it was fine how it was, obviously, and then he got his face licked, so, you know, you're not a complete loser, I suppose.
Dude, that lick of death, too. Woo!
Dude, what I liked was that Mil Muertes licked his lips, and it's like there was no kiss this time.
Dude, I was thinking about that the whole time, too. He had, like, his tongue out like a dog. And I think he was waiting for us, like, nope. Nope, yeah. We talked to HR about this, Mil. Like, that's why you went into the coffin the first time. I was thinking about that, too, because, my God. I mean, again, Katrina, you are an inferno of hotness. I'm sorry.
Yeah, she is insane.
So that concluded the in-ring action, and this is when we got some real consequences in Lucha Underground, as we've talked about, as far as, you know, when you fail in Lucha Underground, if you're a toady, you know, bad things happen to you. And Dario Cueto essentially was saying as much to his crew that you embarrassed me and somebody's got to pay the piper. So which one? And
rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Cortez and Mr. Cisco just both caught each other's eye, and then they grabbed Bale, and Dario said, put him up to the bars, and that is when, unbeknownst to us at this time, but Matanza turns his face into just red mush and kills a character on Lucha Underground. I believe, is this the first fatality that we've had?
Well, since Mil Muertes has returned, yes.
Yeah, so first fatality, I remember watching that being like, wow, I guess...
it's when the story takes a turn.
They really aren't playing around in this show.
We're playing for keeps.
Yeah, which, again, I really appreciate in Lucha Underground is that they are telling a story. So it made total sense to me. I loved it. That concluded Fight to the Death. And overall thought on that episode, Jeff?
No, I thought it was a terrific episode. What I found interesting was, yes, I mean, it was technically like dual main events, but the return of Mil Muertes was so big that a championship match was basically bumped from the top spot, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about that as well. That was interesting to me that was not the main event, but it was, you know, the rebirth.
But it should have been. The return of Mil Muertes is more important than just one title shot.
Dominant return for Mil Muertes, some good stuff. That concludes the greatest hits for this episode, but airing next will be All Night Long. And then Penultima Lucha coming up next. So that will be the next Greatest Hits that airs on February 8th. So, yeah, we will review that for you. But that will do it for us tonight here at Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.